The Buddhist teachings emphasize over and over again understanding suffering. In particular, is the way the mind moves naturally towards release. Understanding suffering, we understand how greed, aversion, and delusion work in our minds. And quite naturally, that understanding leads to the abandonment of greed, aversion, and delusion. Another way to maybe think about this exploration of understanding experience, understanding what is happening, is to have some curiosity about what is actually happening. Our usual way of relating to experience, of knowing the world, is mediated by, filtered by, influenced by what we think how we have been conditioned. Our ideas, our views, beliefs, agendas, opinions. And so the encouragement is to explore the possibility of seeing experience and the phrase in this text is yatha bhuta, as it actually is. I checked in the Majjhima Nikaya today. This is one of the texts. There were 184 occurrences of the word there. That's used a lot. It's used in phrases like, and the a frequent translation of this term, yatha bhuta, is as it actually is. And so there's the phrase in his own understanding, his own awakening, he says, I directly knew suffering as it actually is. I directly knew the arising of suffering as it actually is. Directly knew the cessation of suffering as it actually is. And the way leading to the cessation of suffering as it actually is. It's also used a number of times in relationship to the aggregates. One understands form as it actually is. This is not mine. This is not who I am. This is not myself. One understands feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness, as it actually is. This is not mine. This is not who I am. This is not myself. So this phrase, Yata Bhuta, evokes this sense of what is actually happening? A kind of a curiosity. What is actually happening in our experience? Actually happening underneath our concepts, our views, our opinions, our ideas, our agendas. This term, Yata Bhuta, has been translated in different ways. Things as they are is one. Things as they have come to be. And as it actually is. I found it interesting in my own exploration of this sense of what is actually happening, and to reflect on the different flavors that these different translations point to. So things as they are, this moment of experience, as it is. Things as they are. Things as they are here, are already here. It's already happening. And yet we fight, we struggle often with what is here. We fight, we struggle with things as they are. Thinking, wishing they should be, could be, hope they would be some other way. And that fight with things as they are, the fight with this is what is here. Fighting with reality, basically, is what we're doing. Wishing reality were not this way. As one friend of IRC says, when you fight with reality, you lose. Ajahn Sumedho says, I can't find this quote, but it's something like, and it resonated for me. The only real suffering is the wishing that things were some other way. Again, the only real suffering is the fight against reality. There's a way that when we acknowledge or recognize just this simple thing, fighting against what things as they are, the wish they were some other way, is the kind of ground of all of our flavors of suffering. Recognizing that we might begin to understand, to see, to feel into not fighting, coming into alignment with reality. It is like this. This is the way things are. Ajahn Sumedho puts it, it's like this. This is a direct connection to this teaching of Yathābhūta. It's like this. That phrase, for me at least, has been a lovely, like, wisdom reminder. It's like, yeah, it's like this. Can help the mind to kind of drop into this. This is the way things are. And that connection, or that, sometimes think of it as just like an alignment with what is actually here, the alignment with truth, alignment with reality. The mind kind of relaxes. It's like, right, this is the way it is. Even if we don't like it, there's a kind of relaxation of mind, even if it's not pleasant. There's a kind of a relaxation of mind that when it actually acknowledges, yes, this is the way it is. Things as they are. So that coming into alignment with that understanding. Brings a kind of acceptance, a release from that wishing it were some other way. And that release, as Ajahn Sumedho points out, that release is the suffering. I mean, that wish that it were some other way, that is the suffering. When the mind orients to it's like this, it's like when we want it to be another way, there's the disconnect between how things are and how things we want them to be kind of springs up. And it's that disconnect that really is where the suffering is. That's one flavor of this exploration around things. What is actually happening? Just this kind of reminder. What is actually happening is happening. It's just simple. What is happening is happening. It's like not denying that, not fighting with that. This is what is happening. And there's a way that that really can bring some settling into the mind when we can land with that understanding, land with that truth. This is what is happening. Another flavor of this phrase, things as they have come to be. The term Yathābhūta, the Buddha part, the second part of that, does have this past arising flavor to it. So things as they have come to be may be kind of more accurate translation in a way. And that to me points to that a couple pieces. One, that what is arising, what is here, it has arisen. It has come to be already. It reinforces that exploration we just made around what is here, and it kind of re-emphasizes it in this way. It has come to be. Like, we can't undo that. The way that we resist what is here, you know, wishing it were some other way, essentially, that resistance is completely futile because it's already here. It also brings in this sense or flavor of process, of something coming to be, having come to be. It brings in the understanding, the reflection, the deeply interwoven wisdom teaching throughout the Buddha's teachings of conditionality. It has come to be not just randomly arisen. It is here based on lawful processes. What is arising based on conditions from the past, conditions of the world, of the environment, conditions of genetics, conditions of the way our minds and bodies work, the way perception works, the way our eyes receive light and then our brain produces an image that is recognized. So there's that. All of this is conditioned. And the Buddha speaks about this kind over and over again. Based on the eye and forms, the eye and the light coming into the eye, eye consciousness arises. This is just the process of body and mind. Based on the ear and sounds and the meeting of the ear consciousness arises. The meeting of the three is contact. And then there's further conditions. With contact as condition, feeling happens. Pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. This kind of process is at play. It's the tumbling on. Things coming to be. Moment by moment. And what is experienced in the moment has come to be already. There's another crucial condition that interplays with all of these other flavors of conditions. The environmental conditions, the genetic conditions, just the conditions around our mental psychophysical processes. They are the conditions of the choices that we make, the actions that we take. And this is the realm that the Buddha was really interested in. Now, there's not a lot of control. We can't control. We can't undo our genetics. We can't change the environmental conditions we were born into. They have come to be already. We can't change that they have come to be. And this is a piece, I think, about this whole exploration of what has come to be. We can't change what has come to be. It has come to be already. We can't change this existing moment of experience, but our choices and our actions can shape what the next moments are. Our choices and actions can shape how the environment unfolds, can have an effect on some of these other areas of conditions. Our choices and actions might even shape or affect our genetics. I mean, we can get in there and manipulate things these days. So our choices and actions, the Buddha is really interested in this side of the conditioned process. What are our choices and actions, and how do they affect this tumbling on, this continued unfolding of experience? But what has come to be has come to be. And that understanding is very powerful. What has come to be has been shaped not only by all of these other factors, but also by our past choices and actions. This is the teaching on karma. And the basic teaching here is that when we act out of intentions that are related to wholesome qualities of mind, That tends to shape our experience towards more ease and more peace, more freedom. When we choose act out of unwholesome qualities of mind, those based in greed, aversion, and delusion, it tends to perpetuate greed, aversion, and delusion. It tends to perpetuate reactivity. It tends to perpetuate suffering. And so seeing this, understanding that our own being, and this is a teaching around our own choices, our own actions, the things that we do influences and shapes the next things that happen for us. And so this is how the practice works. We hear, it's all conditioned. It's kind of interesting. I mean, we are all fortunate to have heard teachings of the Buddha. We are all even more fortunate that something in our conditions of the time, the moment that we heard it, it landed enough for us to be interested. It landed enough for the kind of mind to perk up and say, huh, I wonder if there's something there. We're even more fortunate to have started to engage, to actually pick up some of these practices and apply them. These choices shape the movement, the direction to the letting go, the abandoning. So it's a natural unfolding. It's a natural law, this karma. It's not some kind of moralistic judgment. It's more if these are the motivations, this is the result. If these are the motivations, there's motivations out of skillfulness, this results in more skillfulness, more movement in the direction of ease, peace. Sometimes karma is related to, or analogy of karma is related to, a seed. If you plant a seed of a particular kind of tree, an apple tree, that seed has the capacity to produce an apple tree and produce more apples and produce more seeds of apple tree, of apples. It kind of produces the seeds of its own kind. But it has the capacity to produce that, those wholesome results, but it does need some conditions to support it as well. So not every apple seed turns into an apple tree, or else we might have nothing but apple trees on the planet. There are conditions, you know, some apple seeds land in the garbage and never grow. Others might land on the soil but then get eaten by a little creature going by. Another one might get mown down by a weed whacker. So it takes a lot of conditions for that, the flowering of that. And so whether the tree grows depends on the conditions. How the tree grows depends on the conditions. So it's not just about the capacity. And it's similar with our wholesome intentions and our unwholesome intentions. This is part of the way the Buddha described this unfolding of karma as not being deterministic. It's like that apple seed has the capacity to become an apple tree, but it needs some support. And you know, our unwholesome intentions have the capacity to become more unwholesome intentions. And they need some support to do that, which is unfortunately the way our mind tends to work. You know, the habit of mind is to reinforce and support those tendencies because the mind is very confused, because the mind believes, basically, when caught by those formations, caught by those seeds of anger, of desire, of wanting, of craving, you know, those mental tendencies, not only do they want to reach out and get the thing that they want or get rid of the thing that they don't want, but they deeply, deeply, deeply believe that that getting of the thing is what is going to make me happy. And that's why they're motivated to get what they want. It's not just about getting it. It's because it believes the deep level, this is going to do it for me. And so those delusions are kind of part of the engine of the tumbling on of those seeds. The Buddha phrased this in this teaching in a very succinct sentence. Whatever one frequently ponders, that becomes the inclination of the mind. So when we frequently ponder, believe that getting what I want will make me happy, act on that, that just reinforces that. When we hear teachings of the Buddha, maybe we've finally landed with something else has got to work. I'm not finding, you know, I'm doing what I thought you're supposed to do to be happy in this world, but it's not working. That's how I came to the practice. And somebody sent me a book saying, here, this has been helpful. And I thought, well, I don't get how that works. How does watching my anger make me less angry? But I was willing to try. So hearing the teachings, having the willingness, that moment when a friend sent me that book and like sent me into at least the investigation of something else is possible, that's a huge turning of the mind. Recognizing that the way that I thought happiness came about doesn't seem to be very effective. Willing to try something else. And so then there becomes more the shaping, the willingness to explore, pick up these. You know, let's see what happens if I observe anger when it happens. To my shock, it was useful. It did not increase the anger. It created the conditions for it to decrease. And so the tumbling on of the karma there, the shaping of wholesome conditions, new things, new direction coming to be. Not by changing what had come to be, what was already here, but by engaging in a new way. So all of those prior moments of conditioning anger over and over again, there was a lot of watching that, a lot of seeing it. But those moments of observing, this is a huge understanding, a big shift of mind, the seeing that being with and observing greed, aversion, and delusion is a whole different thing than being involved with it. It takes some trust. So So exploring things as they have come to be, we can see moment to moment that things are arising. It's not static. That's another piece of this teaching, that experience is not static. There's continually things coming to be, continually new things arising. And we see this. This is what we see when we open our attention with mindfulness to our experience. Anybody notice things change today? It's constant. It's the nature of experience. So understanding and seeing that things come to be, as the mindfulness gets more continuous, I was talking about encouraging continuity this morning. As the mindfulness gets more continuous, there's a way that we can start to see in a moment something coming to be, in the moment something else coming to be, in the next moment something else coming to be. Sometimes we get to see the relationship. We get to see the conditions unfolding. We get to experience how things come to be very directly. Seeing a process unfolding. And the observation of what's happening in this moment when we see wanting, when we see aversion, we understand that those states of mind are onward leading to suffering. We understand that when we see wisdom and compassion and patience, tranquility, equanimity, those are supportive of onward leading to ease and peace. So in a kind of moment to moment, as we observe moment to moment experience, we might start to see, you know, how the direct connection between wanting and suffering, and the direct connection between letting go, abandoning, and the release from suffering. And I've also seen or felt at times in practice that, and this can feel like, oh, I have to see things at a really precise level. And sometimes that can happen. Sometimes we can see just like somebody's just opened our mind up and showing us, you know, this is how your mind does something moment after moment. A memory arises, and then a thought, and then an intention, and then a movement to a whole mind state. We see it in a split second. We can see that sometimes. And sometimes that can be extremely freeing. The mind simply seeing that can let go of a habit or pattern that it's heading to simply because it understands that way lies suffering. That's how, you know, that's one way the abandoning happens, when the mind sees a kind of a tumbling toward suffering. It might just go, I don't think so. Let's just not go there. But not something that we can make happen. So sometimes that direct seeing of just a moment-to-moment conditionality unfolding can be very powerful. And that can come with the continuity. But I've also seen and experienced, just through repeatedly understanding how things are conditioned, having seen the conditioned nature of experience so many times, just simply remembering that something is conditioned. This thing that has arisen, this experience that's exploding in my face, whatever it is, it's like, oh, right, this has come to be. This is conditioned based on prior circumstance. And that, just that recognition is just that, yep, this is conditioned. Sometimes that's what how it states itself in my mind. It's like, oh yeah, this is conditioned. That can be very, it's like that's aligning with truth right there. It's aligning with truth. And the mind in that understanding, what I feel sometimes happens is that instead of being caught in like trying to fix it and change it, it more goes, oh, it's conditioned. This is its nature. And there's a lot more space to just watch the conditions unfold. Sometimes it can feel like you're just watching dominoes fall. Just seeing a tumbling on of mind states and yet not being able to stop that from happening, but also just seeing it. It can be quite funny or amazing at times to just have that sense of awe of seeing how the mind just does its thing, even as it's doing its thing. Kind of sense of joy, of delight, of amazement. That's a freedom. Even as it's like the pattern, sometimes these patterns, it's like they're launched, it's like they've been shot out of a cannon, and sometimes the seeing of it, it's not like it keeps it from continuing, but it is completely aware of it. And somehow that it's like it takes the explosion out of the cannonball. You know, it's not going to hurt anybody, that cannonball shot out of that cannon. Maybe it's just going to kind of go fizzle in the air or something. Now, understanding that things are conditioned. This is nature. This mind state that's happening is, this is the apple tree that's growing right now. It's had the conditions that supported this. This is nature. I talked about using wisdom reminders this morning, and that's one way to use them, bringing kind of a reminder to yourself. I found sometimes when something is difficult, we talked about working with difficulty a little bit, and you know, if it's hard to be with something, then using some tools to support that capacity to be with it, and often, you know, maybe shifting to something else. But this kind of bringing in wisdom can be a tool that allows you to keep staying with it. You don't have to shift away from it. I find it often helpful just to remind myself, yep, this is impermanent, or this is nature. Kind of create some space in the mind to allow it to be with the experience, not fight with it. It shifts the attitude of the mind. It's like it's shifting the attitude of the mind from to one of it's a problem to one of understanding. This has come to be. This is nature. The third flavor of this term, as it actually is. One understands form, feeling, perception, as it actually is. This flavor reminds me of that phrase I used last night, this morning, of what is actually happening. That flavor of the word actually to me points to it reminds me of the Bahia Sutta, like the an understanding of experience that is just this bare, what is actually here? Sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, things going on in the mind. That's what's actually happening. There's an eye with sight, an ear with sound, a mind with thought. That's what's going on. We like some flavors of those six things. Joseph likes to say only six things ever happen. That's what's actually happening in our experience, these six things. We happen to like certain configurations of those six things. We don't like other configurations of those six things. And therein our mind kind of produces a whole bunch of suffering in the not liking of and liking of others. So it points to a kind of an understanding of experience. In the seen is only the seen. That's a phrase from the Vihiya Sutta. The heard is only the heard. In the sensed is only the sensed. In the cognized is only the cognized. It evokes this notion or this idea of understanding experience. An understanding that's free from bias, opinion, views, beliefs. A bare experience. Seeing, just seeing. A sight, a sound, a body sensation, an arising in the mind. A phrase that's sometimes used in connection with this teaching, this sutta. And the teaching, this is a teaching the Buddha is giving to a wandering monastic who came to see him. And he starts it by saying, this is how you should train yourself. In the seen is only the seen. In the heard is only the heard. In the sensed is only the sensed. In the cognized is only the cognized. And so this is pointing to a practice that it's a training. We're not going to be able to just like somehow flip a switch and say, oh, I'm going to know things and the seen is only the seen. Probably not. But there's the encouragement to be curious about what is seeing, what is hearing, what is sensing, what is cognizing. Is there seeing without views, opinions, bias, judgment? What might that look like? So kind of a curiosity around. And just to me, even this phrase, and the seen is only the seen, evokes a little bit of like kind of a startle in the mind. What might that mean? What might it mean to be aware of bare physical and mental experience without filters, without judgment, without opinions, views, beliefs, reactions, narrative stories, and if there are opinions, views, beliefs, narrative stories, which there are going to be, this is, I think, the beauty of this teaching, that it encourages us to look at those two as simply a phenomenon arising. In the cognized is only the cognized. So of course there's going to be seeing and then a judgment about it. And the practice, the training is to notice that too as a phenomenon, as opposed to being involved with it. This is really the exploration around checking the attitude, looking at how our mind is in relationship, beginning to uncover some of these perspectives, these views, these filters that we have on our experience. when we can recognize that an agenda is happening, instead of obscuring or getting in the way of seeing things as seeing something as it actually is, it becomes a part of seeing what actually is. This is happening, and there's a belief around it. That's huge. Often beliefs are so hidden. If we don't, we usually don't really know that beliefs are happening. We're just taking our, just some part of us is believing something and it's taking it to be true. So we don't question it. We don't even know it's a belief often. We're just acting from that belief. And so to know that a belief is arising, to be curious about what is being believed, when there's suffering, when there's some kind of struggle in the list of all of those defilements, those reactive habits and patterns from yesterday's talk, understanding ill will, one sees it as not leading to ease and peace. Understanding ill will gets in the way of ease and peace. All of those reactive habits of mind are based in a belief, based in a view of some sort. And so it's, you know, we can see the pattern, the habit of it, of that itself. What does it feel like to have ill will? Touch into that flavor of a body or mind that experiences ill will. And sometimes that allows it to release. There's an understanding that it's suffering itself, and that understanding, you know, the seeing that ill will is suffering, can allow a release from it. And that ill will is arising not randomly. That ill will has a condition. It's based in something. Based in some kind of view or belief. And there are different ones. I mean, you know, the basic belief around aversion is that this is in the way of making me happy. And so that's a kind of a basic belief there. If that belief that this thing weren't, if there wasn't that belief that this thing is in the way of making me happy, there wouldn't be ill will towards it. And so there's a lot of different, there's a lot of different layers of beliefs that are operating in our system. And some of them have been conditioned by our history, our families, cultural conditioning, all kinds of threads come in to shape layers and layers of beliefs that we have. And so while we can't decide to simply understand our experience as it actually is, the training, I think, is to be curious about it and to notice what might get in the way of seeing things as they actually are, curious about the attitudes, the agendas, the beliefs that kind of are that we are looking through, that are obscuring, filtering things as they actually are. So checking the attitude really begins to get at this aspect. I think of the checking the attitude as a really kind of key portion of this training in the scene is only the scene. Because without curiosity about, okay, what's not being seen, and that's another way at that, you know, what am I not seeing? Without that curiosity, things often stay hidden. And so we can explore different flavors of questions. You know, what is the attitude? What's the relationship to what's happening? What's being believed right now? What else is happening? It could also be phrased as an invitation rather than a question. Like, anything willing to show up? Anything else here that wants to be seen? Just like opening your system, opening your heart and mind to this invitation that I'm here, I'm not going to run from you. You know, if you want to show up, I'm here. Kind of like that naturalist sitting in the forest, sitting quietly enough that there's an invitation that the creatures can come out and start to feel safe to be seen. It's kind of like that. Anything else willing to show up and be seen right now? As a way to begin to see what kind of things are hidden in the cognized is only the cognized. That's really where the suffering happens. And so much of it is hidden from us. And the suffering happens in the hiddenness. When it's seen, there's the chance to understand, oh, that's just something being cognized in this moment. And the cognized is only the cognized. Believing is happening right now. That shift from believing something to being aware that you're believing it, it like creates a little space in the mind around the experience. Especially for me, this was really relevant around states of mind that related to self-negativity. Believing, I'm a failure, I'm no good, I'm not worthy, I'm not worth anything. Those kinds of thoughts. The whole like way I interacted with the world was just operating out of believing those. And then starting to see them at first, it's like, whoa, you know, I believe those? I had no idea that level of self-hatred was there. I knew I was miserable a lot of the time, but didn't really quite understand the depth of self-hatred that was going on. And at first it was like humbling and you know, just almost terrifying. But then the mind began to understand this is a belief. It's just a belief that's happening. And so while it didn't like turn off the belief, it's like it created the understanding of, oh, this is a condition. Going back to that prior one around, you know, things have come to be. This self-hatred has arisen based on conditions. It's not me. It's just arising. And it's just being believed. Like there's a thought that's coming up in the mind and there's this believing process that's picking it up and running with it. Seeing that believing is happening was so freeing. And this, I think, is and this goes along with seeing that agendas are happening, seeing that judgments are happening, seeing that beliefs, views, opinions are happening. Understand that they are happening. It's in that realm of like kind of stepping out of the content of the beliefs, the views, the judgments, and just knowing that it is a happening. That's in the cognized is only the cognized. Understanding that a judgment is just an arising phenomena in the mind. And the cognized is only the cognized. This term, yata bhuta, is also connected with a kind of a place on the path of practice where there's deep seeing into the nature of experience as impermanent, unreliable, not self. A level of insight, understanding, a level of recognition. And yet again, we can't just decide, I'm going to see this as impermanent. What we can notice is, I'm taking this to be permanent. That's, you know, that the kind of the belief in the back of the mind, this is permanent. This is going to last forever. This is reliable. I'll be able to hang out with this and that'll make me happy. So we can notice when we have those perspectives. When are we taking something to be solid? When are we taking something to be stable? When are we taking something to be me, mine, who I am? Kind of seeing the misperceptions, the misunderstandings around these three truths as misperceptions. You know, the idea that something is solid and stable is just an arising in the mind. It's an idea. And again, it's connected to a belief. So seeing that, oh, that's being believed. It's believing that this is going to make me happy. To my shock, I've actually seen that depth of belief connected to something as mundane as eating a piece of chocolate. Oh, this is going to do it for me. For that moment, the mind believes it's forever. That's the depth of delusion that operates in our minds. Kind of stunning. Chocolate, you know. We know, rationally we know, chocolate lasts maybe. I mean, it's pretty good. You know, the pleasure of chocolate lasts a good minute, you know. But, I mean, we know it's not forever. But still, that just the seeing how deeply the mind believed that, it was a shock. When we're going for something, when we're operating out of greed, out of aversion, the mind believes in that level of something is going to be reliable, that's going to be permanent to make me happy. So seeing curiosity about that, curiosity about those attributions, those beliefs, those views, moves us in the direction of seeing things as they are. How does our mind do what it does? And this whole exploration of understanding, really the kind of an elaboration on that part of the simile of the cloth that exploring this evening, the understanding experience, understanding things that get in the way of happiness and peace, one abandons them. This kind of exploration around things as they are is a deepening of the understanding. And as we start to see that things are impermanent, unreliable, not self, there is that natural abandonment. The mind lets go. The mind understands the delusion embedded in greed, the delusion embedded in aversion. Understands it's not onward leading. So the understanding, again, is really where the practice is, maybe this curiosity about what kind of attitudes, agendas, beliefs are in the way of things as they are. And the seen is only the seen. The heard is only the heard. The sensed is only the sensed. And crucially, in the cognized is only the cognized. Just greed arising. Just confusion arising. Just love arising. Just equanimity arising. Both sides. And the ending of the simile of the cloth pointed to that too. Seeing love, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity also as in the cognized is only the cognized. Those two have come to be. A deeper kind of letting go. Not holding on even to those. So let's sit for a moment.